Court, Counsel. My name is Steve Jacobson. I'm an assistant federal defender, and I represent Anthony Swift in this appeal. I would like to reserve a couple minutes if I can, and I'll try to watch the clock. This is an appeal from a conviction for Mr. Swift's being charged with being a felon in possession of a firearm under 922G1. There are two issues briefed in the case, one with regard to a suppression motion, the other with regard to the sentencing. And the sentencing has several issues inherent in it. My intent would be to address anything the court has particular concern over, and I would not want to spend a lot of time on the search issue, which I think is adequately briefed. I could spend a brief amount of time, however, if the court wants to direct me there. Otherwise, I would like to spend time with the much more fluid area of the law, I guess we could call it at this point, of the Armed Career Criminal Act, the punishments available under it, and the constitutional cases coming down from the Supreme Court and our arguments in the briefs. The second portion of the brief makes an argument that this court should interpret the Armed Career Criminal Act to provide for grand jury indictment and trial rights with regard to the prior convictions. And there are several layers to that argument. The third portion of the brief argues that, quite aside from those arguments, that in this case, under a straight Taylor analysis, that the convictions in this case are not categorical, that the two burglaries in particular are not categorical burglaries under Oregon law, and secondly, if we go to a modified categorical approach, that there is not evidence in this record to sustain holding those to be valid predicates under the Armed Career Criminal Act.
On that issue, by the way, which approach did the district court use?
The district court didn't make much analysis of it, simply said he was relying on circuit precedent and said that the convictions were valid armed career criminal predicates. There really wasn't a lot of discussion. We presented our arguments in writing and only referred to them briefly at sentencing. But it
was one of them a nolo or a... and one was a guilty plea?
Yes, the burglary in the second degree was a guilty plea, and the burglary in the first degree was part of a nolo plea to three counts of a later indictment in 1995. The initial thing that we have to deal with in the categorical approach is that there... As the government points out, and as I pointed out to the court at the time of sentencing, there are two cases in Oregon that happened right after Taylor, Cunningham and Hunt, which said Oregon burglary appears to match what Taylor's saying. However, if you look at those cases, there was no analysis of what the Oregon statute really said. And in particular, no...
What does that mean? What does that mean as far as we're concerned?
As far as we're concerned,
if you're correct that there's no analysis, so what?
The definition of building in the Oregon statute is the very kind of overbroad definition that Taylor forbids.
So what in the sense that aren't we still bound by them?
I would argue that you're not bound by them under these circumstances, for a couple of reasons. First, the court did not rely on the definition of building when doing their analysis, and so it really hasn't been litigated. And so the narrow holding of those cases may simply be that those cases involved burglaries of generic buildings. Secondly, there's been a wealth of litigation since then, including on bank opinions, not with regard to Oregon burglary, but with regard to Taylor analysis that informs this court and the Ninth Circuit in general of how this analysis has to be conducted. Corona Sanchez and Rivera-Sanchez, I think, were the two cases I cited. They dealt with other California statutes, but the analysis should be the same, and that you really have to compare all the elements, and if there's anything that doesn't match, then you have to go to the modified categorical approach. The third reason is that I would submit that the Shepherd opinion, the separate Shepherd decision last month from the Supreme Court, really gives us a fresh run at this, because it reiterates what was mentioned in Taylor, but brings it home strongly that burglaries of boats and vehicles and other things that don't match the Taylor definition of generic burglary cannot be used as armed career criminal predicates. And the Oregon statute provides clearly for let me read you the definition of building. Building, in addition to its ordinary meaning, includes any booth, vehicle, boat, aircraft, or other structure adapted for overnight accommodation of persons or for carrying on business therein. By its own definition, it's saying we don't just mean building in its ordinary sense. We mean all these other things. So I think
why is that unconstitutional? People sleep in those $200,000 rolling houses that you see blocking the freeway all the time.
We're not arguing that it's unconstitutional. We're arguing that it's a matter of statutory construction, and under Taylor and Shepherd, burglaries of those types of structures don't come under the definition of violent felony in the Armed Criminal Act. A person may be convicted of them, and there's public policy to criminalize the activity, but the Congress didn't do so in 924E, that's what Taylor says. So it's, I think, a matter
of... Well, I can see an as-applied challenge if somebody is convicted of burglary for stealing something out of a boxcar, but the railroad lobby got the boxcar felony charge up so it was higher than the burglary charge, so nobody ever got accused of burglary for stealing out of a boxcar. But what is this, an as-applied or as a facial...
Well, I think that the first analysis has to be facial. If the statutes aren't a generic match, a categorical match, then you have to look at, in effect, an as-applied or the modified categorical approach suggested in Taylor. And in doing that, you're restricted, and that's what Taylor implied and then Shepherd explicitly hold. You're restricted to definite things.
At the sentencing, are you saying that the district court has to have a mini-trial and find out what kind of a burglary this was?
I'm suggesting that the Supreme Court has allowed the lower courts to look at very specific things, restricted, and try not to have many trials, but only rely on the indictment, the judgment, and other factors.
What's your understanding under Shepherd now? What that restricted list includes?
It includes the judgment, the charging document. I think it can include the plea, a record of the plea, including plea colloquy. In our case, in Swift, we don't have that. All we have is the charging document and the judgment, which doesn't say what Mr. Swift, in fact, pled guilty to.
What else is included?
Pardon?
I said, what else is included?
I don't think they reached that issue, and in fact,
the probation reports, for instance, if there is one.
I don't think Shepherd reaches the issue. I think that probation reports are like police reports, which were definitely kept out under Shepherd, and those kinds of factually intense documents are the kinds of things that will cause the mini trials that Taylor forbids and that we shouldn't get into. I see that I've almost used my time.
We'll give you some time for rebuttal.
Yes.
I suppose a similar question. We focused on what you can look at from the prior case under the modified categorical report. Suppose in the current case the defendant acknowledges, in this case, for example, that the burglary was of a residence. Is that good enough?
Yes, I think it definitely could be good enough. In fact, I mean, there's some sense in which by arguing what I'm arguing that I'm going – it would be upsetting the apple cart to make these findings. But if these things were charged in the indictment and a person who, for instance, was pleading guilty to a 922G could be asked those questions under this theory and could admit that, as a factual matter, I pled guilty to burglarizing a generic building in the past. It could be done.
We will give you time for rebuttal.
Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. My name is Tom Gannon from the Criminal Division. We're in this case at the request of the United States Attorney from Oregon. It seems to me that Mr. Jacobson described this area of the law as fluid. I think that's perhaps an overstatement. I think Almendarez-Torres remains good law, and I think Shepard confirms that it remains good law, that undoubtedly people have expressed concerns in Shepard itself. Justice Thomas wrote a partly dissenting opinion saying we ought to overrule Almendarez-Torres. But the fact is the court has been invited on many occasions to overrule Almendarez-Torres and has not done it. And therefore, at the present time, it's clear that a sentencing judge can determine the nature of a prior conviction. And in this case, what Shepard did, and we think Shepard cuts in our favor in this case. What the court said
is... How so? Would you explain that to me?
Sure, Your Honor. What it said is, first of all, that the judge can determine whether a particular burglary is a generic burglary and therefore a violent felony within the meaning of the Armed Career Criminal Act.
Did the district judge do that here?
Yes.
Hard to tell, isn't it?
Well, he said that the sentencing provisions of the Armed Career Criminal Act are appropriately applied.
No, what I mean to say is he never explained whether he was applying the categorical approach or some modified approach.
Well, we think that either approach works. You know, this court has taken, in Cunningham and Hunt, has taken a categorical approach and said, and I do believe the court is bound by Cunningham and Hunt until the court overrules those cases, the court en banc overrules those cases.
Even though there's, as Mr. Jacobson, I think, correctly argues, there's no analysis at all in the opinion, just a categorical conclusion.
Well, I guess they felt it was sufficiently clear, Your Honor. I also would say this. I think under the modified categorical approach, and that's what Shepard is talking about, the modified categorical approach, a district judge in sentencing under the Armed Career Criminal Act can look at the judgment and the charging papers.
All right. Let's go to that. I mean, suppose, hypothetically at least, let's suppose, you know, this panel were to conclude, well, the Oregon statute doesn't meet the categorical definition, right? So the only way to uphold this finding under the ACCA is to, if it can be done under the modified approach, right? Now, I assume it's your case that whatever documents were available here to the district judge are sufficient to support a modified categorical approach type of finding in this case under Shepard?
That is correct.
Would you lead us through that?
Well, yes. The I think it's laid out in our brief, but what you have is you have a 1988 burglary 2 conviction and you have a 1996 burglary 1 conviction, and both of those, the first one is the entrance into a doctor's clinic, and the second...
No, but how do you know it's an entrance into a doctor's clinic?
Because that's what's stated in the charging
papers.
That's
what's charged.
That's what's charged.
But entrance into a doctor's clinic is not a necessary element of the offense. So, you know, when he pleads guilty, unless there's some factual colloquy, like a Rule 11 type of sworn statement by the defendant, then, you know, that is not enough.
I respectfully disagree, Your Honor. I think it is enough. Under Shepard.
There are many cases that say when a defendant pleads guilty, he's only pleading guilty to the necessary elements of the crime.
Yes, and in Oregon.
And in Oregon, going into a doctor's building is not a necessary element of a burglary offense.
Well,
you can go into any building or any car or any boat.
Now that's not quite correct, Your Honor. We're dealing with Cunningham and Hunt in the first instance.
I asked you now to show me what document the judge could have relied on to find burglary under the modified approach, and you said the indictment, because it charges going into a doctor's office.
Right. Well, to the extent that the Oregon statutes, because of the definition of building, are broader than the generic burglary crime, then you can look at the charging documents to refine that. And that is the exact approach that the Supreme Court has endorsed in Shepard. You
show
can look at the charging documents and the judgment to determine what he pleaded guilty to.
Can you point to me some specific language in Shepard? along those lines?
Yes. This is on, actually, I have the Westlaw portion of it, but it's on page 5 of the Westlaw version. This case was of some interest because I worked on the brief for the United States. We did not prevail, so it was, but it was a matter of some interest. But what Justice Souter says is the details of a generically limited charging document would do in any sort of case, and that's tell you what the defendant pleaded guilty to. That's what it says.
See, I don't see where you're reading from.
What's the paragraph start?
The paragraph begins, the court did not, however, purport to limit adequate judicial record evidence strictly to charges and instructions. And then there's a citation discussing the use of these documents as an example. Since a conviction might follow a trial to a judge alone or a plea of guilty.
I see that, all right.
Okay.
I see that. Okay.
And
the
it's the last sentence.
However, and then in that paragraph, where are you?
It says in cases tried without a jury or in pleaded cases, you know, certain documents would be useful. But then it says, with such material in a pleaded case, a later court could generally tell whether the plea had necessarily rested on the fact identifying the burglary as generic. And then it says,
but when it says, with such material in a pleaded case, what material is it referring to?
Well, it's referring to a transcript of a plea.
Look what it's referring to above, huh? A transcript of the plea colloquy.
That's
a
correct.
Plea agreement. It didn't say indictment.
But then, Your Honor, if you read to the end of that last sentence, it says, just as the details of a generically limited charging document would do in any sort of case. And that's what we're talking about here, a generically limited charging document that shows that regardless of what the Oregon statutes, you know, that the building definition in the Oregon statutory scheme might have said, here, with the charging documents, and they're laid out at pages 147 through 163 of the excerpts of record, this charging document talked about a generic burglary. The doctor's clinic, in the case of the 1988 Burglary 2 conviction, and a dwelling in the case of the 1996 Burglary 1 conviction. That's all we're saying, Your Honor, and it's endorsed by Shepard, and it's been endorsed by this Court's cases. We're not, I think, holding out for some kind of novel interpretation of the law. We're simply saying, as far as the broader argument, if you want to hear about that, it seems to me it's clear from this Court's cases, a more recent case is Quintana, but Summers, Tighe, Kesey, these cases, they all say Apprendi and Blakely have not, and now Booker, haven't changed. They haven't overruled Almendarez-Torres. The judge is entitled to make the determination.
I'm going back to your reliance on the indictment, right? The last sentence of that paragraph?
Yes, sir.
Right? Or the phrase says, you know, just as the details, right? It says of a generically limited charging document. But this is not generically limited here.
No, what
that's the whole point, isn't it?
No, I think what it means is this: is that what the charging document does in the context of a non-generic statute, when it spells out that this is in fact a generic burglary that's being charged, that's what it means to say a generically limited charging document. I think that's our position, and I think if you read Justice Souter's opinion, that's what he's talking about, that you've got an indictment that says whatever the statute might say, this is a generic burglary. And I think that's our position. And we feel that Shepard, in fact, confirms our position. Almendarez is still good law. The judge can make the determination. He can look at the judgment. He can look at the charging document and make the determination.
Well, I agree with you generally, and I agree with you all down the line. My only question is when you get to the last part, what can the judge look at? I'm not sure under Shepard.
Well, I think that's spelled out, I think, actually, at the very end of the opinion. Justice Souter, in his conclusion, spells out the terms of the charging document, the terms of a plea agreement, the transcript of a colloquy between the judge and the defendant in which the factual basis was confirmed. But we didn't need to do that here because we had the charging document and we had the judgment. These other things, if they were missing, they could, you know, if you didn't have the charging document and you had the plea colloquy, you could make the determination with some kind of assurance. That's what we're looking for. That's what the court was looking for here, what it was looking for in Shepard. And in Shepard, they said police complaints, police reports, complaint applications, that's too far. We can't go that far. But they say these matters can be considered. And they were properly considered by Judge Jones here when he sentenced Mr. Swift. And Mr. Swift got a got a significant break. He got a 55-month departure here because of one of the qualifying convictions looked like it was a staged robbery and not an actual robbery. Does the court want to hear about the detention and frisk issue?
No, I guess not.
Covered.
All right. Well, thank you very much. If you have no further questions.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Jacobson, we'll give you 2 minutes.
Thank you. Let me pick up the modified categorical analysis. First of all, the charging document in the case does not allege a doctor's office or a clinic. It just alleges a building at an address.
Charging document in which case?
In the burglary 2 that was
original
being...
case.
I'm sorry.
The prior conviction.
The burglary the 2 that was being discussed, where the government has said that it charged a doctor's clinic. It does not. It charges building.
It does charge a building, though.
Yes, it charges a building located. The definition of building includes all those other things. So this does not limit it to generic just by stating that it's a building. I believe that that's clear.
What about the other row?
The other burglary also just states an address. It says a dwelling located at 3033 Southeast 122nd. That's on ER 158. And dwelling is redefined under Oregon, under the statute, as a building, and so we have the same problem, that we can't tell generically from the charging document. The cases relied on by the government to say that these charging documents and judgments can be used also have pleas in them.
I don't know.
The Kilgore case where they...
Just a minute. I'm looking at this indictment, right? It said the defendant did unlawfully enter and remain in the building located at so-and-so.
Yes.
You don't think that's clear enough to mean building in the generic sense?
I don't believe it does, because building has a statutory definition, and so it could, the building, as I read to the court before, building means, in addition to its ordinary meaning, all these other things. And so saying building under Oregon law doesn't tell you what kind of building or which one.
Well, if it said a building, you know, tied up at the dock at such and such a pier, you might think building means something else.
Well, that might help my case, but I don't.
Right.
I don't think that would be necessary.
It seems to me about as close as you can get to charge a generic building. What else can you say?
Well,
what else can the indictment say, to be clear, that it's, we'll say, the generic building? You know, I don't know what the custom is in the Multnomah County, and for instance, whether, even if it's a car or a boat, they still charge a building. I have no idea. Do you?
Generally, the custom in places that I've practiced are to plead in terms of the statute. So here, building is what's necessary. They allege building, just as in the transport sale of drug cases in Rivera-Sanchez out of California. They cite the general statute, but the Ninth Circuit has been clear that just citing the general statute or the language of the general statute doesn't get us to assure us.
You know, charged with second-degree burglary in violation of section so-and-so, period. Without any description of what happened, right? Wouldn't that be the charge in terms of the language of the statute?
Well, that would be a very basic way of doing it, but I don't. That's not what I'm saying.
That's not the practice.
It's
not the Oregon way.
No, I wanted to make one other comment, if I could. The statement that Almendarez-Torres is still good law, I believe, is belied by the decisions in Dretke versus Halley, as we pointed out in our briefing, and then Shepard, as I pointed out in the 28J letter. These cases specifically say that the Supreme Court should use the doctrine of constitutional doubt or constitutional avoidance because of the terrible problems of constitutionality by using Almendarez-Torres in these other contexts. So that gets to the whole section 2 of the brief, which we really didn't have a chance to get to, but I disagree with how the government's characterization of Almendarez-Torres. Thank you.
Thank both counsel for their argument. The case is submitted. Next case on this morning's calendar is Hyde versus Barnhart.